Senate Special Committee on Education. We have with us Senator Davis, Senator Olson, Senator Wilkins, Senator Huggins, myself, Stevens. We've got two bills before today. Before us today, House Bill 192 and Senate Bill 14. Representative Dugan, good to see you this early this morning.
Good to be seen this early.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thanks for hearing this bill. My name, for the record, is Mike Dugan. I represent House District 25. House Bill 192 makes a pretty simple change in existing law. Currently, school districts are required by state law to notify tenured teachers. I want to keep this straight. There's two categories here. There's tenured and non-tenured. The tenured teachers by the 16th of March if they are in contemplating laying them off. They have to send them a pink slip by the 16th of March. What's happened in my community and many others in Alaska from time to time is that because education funding from the state very rarely makes it to the districts, I'm not sure it's ever made it to the districts by then in the past. They send out what you can only think of as preemptive pink slips. I know in the 1990s when the budget was being pared down here in the state legislature, we had rafts of pink slips that went out in Anchorage. It's not quite as big a problem for the larger communities now because essentially what's happening is that the teacher population is turning over. They have more younger teachers and therefore have more non-tenured teachers, and the law doesn't cover non-tenured teachers. But in some smaller communities, it's still a problem. Any community that's got a relatively small teacher workforce and a high percentage of tenured teachers will still run into this problem. What this bill does is it says that unless there's an education funding bill by the 1st of March, that date, which is now the 16th of March, slips to the end of the school year. So that tenured teachers and non-tenured teachers would all have the same notification date, which is the end of the school term. If there is an education bill by the 1st of March, then the March 16th notification date for tenured teachers remains. It's essentially as simple as that, so I'll stop talking about any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Could you now run through that again? So I understand the March 16th, and you say if there's no budget, then sent to the districts, then by the end of the school year, it puts that pink slip off till the end of the school year?
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, under the assumption that that would eliminate the need for these sort of preemptive pink slips. I know that in my community in Anchorage, when that was going on back in the 90s, it caused a great deal of angst among the people who got those pink slips because they were never really sure if they were really going to be out of a job or if this was just a notification that the district was doing to comply with state law. And in a lot of cases, you know, after that happens 3 or 4 years, you start to look at your whole card. And we had teachers leave just because they were tired of this continual series of pink slips that they were getting.
Thank you. My experience was being president of the school board when the governor Sheffield cut the budget seriously, and we had to pink slip in Kodiak a whole lot of teachers, and it was a terrible situation because they went out and got jobs elsewhere and were not available when we wanted to hire them back. But I guess my question is, what does this do for the teacher? Is it just sort of like, because you're not telling the teacher in March they're going to lose the job, you're going to wait till later to tell them they've lost their job. So I'm wondering, what is is this sort of like a little trick on teachers that we're making here, that we're not going to fire them until later, but we're just putting it off. So it's not an advantage for them, it's maybe even a disadvantage not to know till later you're going to lose your job. Just a thought.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that if the pink slip is a serious pink slip, that is, the board actually intends to terminate the teacher, then there's a disadvantage to that teacher in terms of being able to find new employment if you wait to the end of the school year. I recognize that that's true. It's a balancing act. It depends on which side of this issue you come down on. In my view, school districts, particularly small school districts, that depend heavily on experienced teachers to teach more than one course. I just had, I think, the folks from Wrangell in who were talking about exactly this issue about losing teachers who'd been there a long time and were certificated, I think that's the right word, to teach more than one course, are in substantial danger of having those people get tired of getting these pink slips and walk off. So it depends, essentially the committee's position on this, I think, will depend on where it comes down on this issue. And in my view, the thing that tipped me over to sponsor the bill is, regardless of how this works, I don't think it's the state's position to be telling local governments how to handle their labor relations. If the teachers want that March 16th date, they can negotiate it. There's nothing in this bill that would keep a school district from saying that we'll do this. But it's just the state sort of being in the position of having a law that has, in my experience, caused a great deal of consternation in my community that I just don't think is a good idea.
And the difference between tenured and non-tenured on the pink slips, is there a difference there?
Yeah. The currently, non-tenured teachers don't have to be notified by the 16th of March. If you don't have tenure, and I can give you a hazy idea of what that means, but I think Mr. Alcantara is here and could give the committee a much better idea of exactly what the terms of tenure are than I can. Okay. But if they don't have tenure, then they're at the end of the school year.
Great. Thanks, Representative Dugan. Questions, Senator Huggins?
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. We go, by virtue of this bill, we go from March 16th to date uncertain, because when the school year ends. Is there any unintended consequences of the fact that one is through sometime in May, the other one's through June 15th, whatever the variable? Does it create some dilemma as far as what happens to those people that get their pink slips and what they might do with other school districts?
The reason it went to the end of the school year is because the state's budgeting is pretty uncertain. And so if what you're trying to do is to peg the pink slip to an actual budget, so it's a real pink slip, it's difficult to put an actual date in here because we don't know exactly when the budget's going to pass. Or, you know, it's not just when it passes, of course, it's when it gets through the governor and it's signed into law and all the rest of that. I picked the end of the school year simply because the existing statute on non-tenured teachers says that.
Right. Senator Huggins.
And the other part, this does not preclude districts from mailing out pink slips on tenured teachers at any time of their choosing.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much, Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Senator.
Just for your information, we try to hold things up to second hearing to make sure everything is going along the way it should. So look forward to hearing from you once more. And thank you,
Senator.
We have a couple people signed up to speak. John Alcantara from NEA. Mr. Alcantara.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Education Committee. For the record, my name is John Alcantara, Government Relations Director for the 13,000 public school employees that make up NEA Alaska. I'm certain it'll come as no surprise to this committee that NEA Alaska opposes House Bill 192. This legislation, although there's a CS, it's still very similar to the legislation introduced by Senator Ben Stevens, Senate Bill 156, 3 years ago. And this idea is just as bad now as it was 3 years ago. Currently, tenured teachers must be notified by March 16th if they are to be laid off. This is an important benefit earned by teachers when they begin their fourth year of teaching with the same district. When tenured teachers are notified by March 16th, they have appropriate time to attend job fairs, held most often in April, and time to search for new employment in their profession. Furthermore, many schools lock in their staff by having them sign individual contracts prior to the end of the school year. Significant penalties are attached to those contracts if the teachers break them anywhere close to the end of the school year. What this bill does is put all the hardship on the teachers by requiring them early on to notify their district of their intent to return, but allowing the districts the option of laying off teachers on the last day of school. By this time, major recruiting drives have already been completed. Alaska should be doing everything in its power to recruit and retain quality teachers to Alaska. A report published in 2006 by ICER verifies that about 75% of teachers are hired from outside Alaska. Studies also show that 50% of the teaching force leaves the profession after 5 years. Alaska should not be in the business of making things more difficult for teachers. Although I'm certain the sponsor's heart is in the right place by trying to end the annual pink slip kabuki dance, this legislation would be a step backward. And part of what seems to drive this legislation is that school districts never know what their funding level will be by March 16. NEA Alaska supports efforts to forward fund education and to get as much financial information to districts as soon as possible. It would seem a more appropriate response to districts who claim they don't know what their funding levels will allow would be to support the forward funding of education. The important work done by the Education Funding Task Force this past summer and the drive to fund education by March 1st this year would seem to make this legislation superfluous at best. I appreciate your time and allow me to testify in opposition to House Bill 192. Please allow the process of early K-12 funding to work without the burden of this legislation moving through the process. Appreciate your time. I can try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. Could you just run through that again? So when a teacher has to give notification to the district to continue, just are there some dates there, or is it up to the district that we're talking
about? Mr. Chairman, it's up to the individual contract that's signed to retain the teacher. And I mean, with the incredible teacher turnover, I was here, a lifelong Alaskan. I was obviously here and actually taught in 90 and 91. When tenured teachers are getting laid off, we know we have some serious catastrophic things going on. I mean, I can tell you there's been 400 teachers hired in Anchorage just in the last two school years. So it'd have to be cuts beyond the bone to get into that level. But it's still a earned right to have that notification by March 16th, at least under current law. And I think it allows truly does allow folks to see where they want to move on with their career. And it's an unfortunate situation, but hopefully one that won't be replicated any time in our near future.
Well, thank you, John. I understand what you're saying, but give me an idea of what would happen in a district, say in Anchorage. What is the notification that tenured teachers have to give normally that they're going to continue their job?
That tenured teachers have to give to the district?
Right.
Mr. Chairman, it's through the signing of a contract. I mean, that before the end of the school year, if they're going to be retained for the next school year that begins in August, there is no date certain. Though.
Well, what I'm saying is you said that the teacher must notify the district early, but the district does not have to notify the teacher until later now. So is there a time where?
Well, on these individual contracts, I mean, if they come to you for a contract, there is no individual time in statute, but if they want to be retained for the next year, go to their principal and work out a contract situation, move one step up the pay scale, there is no date certain that they have to notify by.
Okay. The questions, Mr. Alcantara? Senator Harris.
Yeah, just a statement for clarification, but on the other hand, the teacher has a window in which to sign their contract, which is an indication. So, I mean, there is a window of commitment.
Right. Well, and through the chair to Senator Huggins, there's plenty of contracts, especially for new teachers that are hired even after the school year, right, in May 16th or June 8th or whatever date of each individual district has been completed. So that's a good point.
Thank you. Senator Davis?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I understand very well what you're saying. You're saying that you prefer not to have this bill pass, but are you satisfied with the status quo being just the way it is? Because there might become a time where we will not be able to meet that before March 15 date. And people always complain. We need to know in advance so that we can keep our teachers in place and not have to issue out the pink slips. And you also stated that if Anchorage, for example, would never have had to give one to a tenured teacher because they hired at least 400 new teachers last year, and it's untenured teachers that would be able to get the slip and the other teachers would be safe. Is that what you not said?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Davis, to be clear, I mean, there's a large number of teachers that do not have tenure in the Anchorage School District and throughout Alaska. By no means, if I'm being unclear, I don't want to see tenured teachers put into the same, that have earned tenure, put into the same boat as the last day of school year non-tenured teachers have. So,
what would be your solution to that problem?
Well, the solution, I'll admit, has been elusive through the chair. There's a lot of folks that have been here a long time that know that a March 16th date of funding K-12 education has certainly been elusive. And if anything, potentially this 90-day session situation will enable the date to at least come back towards March 16th. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic we're going to see it for the first time this year, but you know, I don't want to be Pollyannish and insist that's going to happen, but I hope it's going to happen, and maybe that'll set a trend for future years. Whether we get forward funding this year or not, I mean, I think the fact is that for the first time in my life in Alaska, we're seeing a bill, the will, and a chance to truly fund education by a March 1st or a March 15th deadline.
Yes, I understand that, and I think, you know, this year might be the year that we'll be able to do that, but there still might be years that we want, and I know we're talking about it, and I've talked about it 6 years on the House side and over here into my 8th year about the situation. So, you know, I look forward to forward funding, early funding, or whatever you might want to call it, because we really haven't got to the forward funding of education yet, but we are trying to agree that we're going to do it early. But anything could happen, and you might not be able to do that. And I was just wondering if you had thought about a suggestion on how you would rectify that if you're not pleased with the date set there. Would any other date, or would you not rather see that at all? Or
through the chair to Senator Davis, I think from the NEA Alaska Delegate Assembly perspective, they didn't talk about an alternative date.
Okay.
So until another time when it's brought up and we can think about a, you know, April 1st date or I wouldn't have a good answer for you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. John, as I recall, there's another trigger that affects tenured teachers, and that's declining enrollment and some other dynamics like that. Could you explain to us whether these provisions have any potential impact on that scenario?
Through the chair to Senator Huggins. I don't know the answer if they have an impact on this scenario or not. I do know that, you know, obviously as enrollment declines in districts, that's going to affect teacher layoffs. And whether that gets to a situation of need, a particular courses that an individual teacher teaches, or whether or not it gets into tenure. I know we had a situation in Haynes. I don't know all the particulars of the lawsuit situation, but it was a situation where they individually plucked out teachers that were tenured before they eliminated teachers that were non-tenured, and it was a situation that went on for a couple of years. So I don't know how that would happen with a dramatic decline in student enrollment for an individual district, and I look forward to part of the package in House Bill 273 and Senate Bill 240 to hopefully stair-step that kind of situation down, and it would be individual district by district how many layoffs would have to happen. Sorry, I don't have the answer to that.
Okay, thank you.
But it does seem like that would have a pretty serious impact. The step-down process, if there's a dramatic decline in enrollment, it seems like if that makes it through this legislature, that should have a pretty positive impact on not having to give out so many pink slips. Senator Walker.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Things have changed in the last few years, and that makes this bill not a very good bill. And I would just have us think about the public education fund that we put in place 3 years ago. That's got $1 billion plus in it now. And I can't envision the day, given our resources, CBR, permanent fund earnings, that the legislature will have the political courage to spend the education fund and not replenish it. So we'll always have, when we come back in January, we'll always have $1 billion or some amount that we've set aside because we won't have the political will to drain that account. So it's just like it is this year. There's no reason whatsoever why we wouldn't be able to get an education bill out of here if we just concentrated on education bills and not let them get balled up in PERS and TERS and revenue sharing. 2003, the education bill set for a month because someone wanted a bulldozer in Rampart. And as funny as that is, that's exactly what happened. So if we just keep politics out of it, and if we focus on what we all campaign on as one of our highest priorities, and we have the money in the bank, there is no reason why we can't have a March 15th education bill. So what this bill does then is this removes one of the levers that gets us to move towards that. And I think we need this pressure. We need the pressure of the teachers to some extent being at risk to know what their future is, to let us know how important it is that we have an education bill and have it free of politics and passed early. So I wouldn't be able to support this bill. I agree with Mr. Alcantara. When Senator Stevens put this in, he put it in for quite a different motive. We were having that pink slip issue beat over our head, as you all remember that. And so he just said, well, we'll just take care of that. We'll remove the pink slip requirement to try to remove the hammer. Well, we're back now for different reasons, but it's something that I think helps us focus on one of our top priorities, and I think it ought to stay in place. Thank you.
I wrote that down. Keep politics out of education.
Thank you, sir.
Am I the first one to say that?
I think so.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Alcantara.
We have Carl Rose with us. Mr. Rose.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I think much of what I was going to say has already been said. I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. You know, this date is something that has created a healthy pressure. I say healthy pressure because I can't think of a better term. This is something that we have to do. We have to do earlier. There are consequences. This is a new day. We are talking about early funding. We're talking about forward funding. I think people recognize some of these issues. And so we're trying to work to resolve that. There are dollars available. And let's talk about what this actually does. It destabilizes our school districts, our workforce. You know, teachers, they understand what the economic conditions are. They can see when things are not looking good. And they know if people are going to get laid off, not just because of a date, but they know. And if they're not going to get a contract offered to them, if it's not required, they're not required to be noticed, especially tenure teachers, they will be looking elsewhere, even if there isn't a layoff. I mean, they have a responsibility to look out for their families. I only come to you today to say that there was a time when AASB would have supported such a bill, but we were very reactionary at that time. It was labor management. It was all those kinds of issues. The dates that we have now, we've learned to live within them. We understand what the consequences are, and we bring those consequences to you when we testify. I would suggest the solution to this is to fund early or the forward fund and give us an opportunity to plan. There's another consequence for teachers if they are offered a contract and they sign. As Mr. Alcantara has said, should they break that contract, they get taken up before the Professional Teacher Practices Commission, and they could lose their certificate. So they're faced with making a choice. And if they find something better, they're already bound. And it just seems to me like this is binding teachers one way and, you know, maybe prohibiting them in another. I think that this is an idea that's time has passed. We're looking forward to a day when we can identify funds early, we can plan ahead, and we can kind of sustain the workforce that we have. It's already been mentioned, we have some difficulty in attracting and attaining or retaining, but this destabilizes many of our school districts. So AASB would be opposed to this piece of legislation for all the reasons that have already been mentioned. So with that, I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Rose. Could you comment on the element in the funding bill on education this year that would step down if funding because of a loss of student population, that issue, does that have an impact on the pink slips, do you think?
Through the chair, that issue is not clear. We have a couple school districts who over time and through attrition have hired teachers, given them tenure, and as they've reduced, they've found that the content areas that were necessary to maintain their course offerings, and in some cases you have a non-tenured science teacher or math teacher and you have three or four people in the area of history or music, but they are tenured. what happens is it makes it very difficult, and the layoff provisions allow you to maybe lay to, it actually allows you to lay off a tenured teacher and retain a non-tenured teacher based on qualifications. A couple school districts tried to do that. They were taken into court and they lost. So it's unclear. The law says one thing, but when you try to exercise it, it doesn't work out. So the provision is there, very difficult to use. And it's an unfortunate circumstance. It happened in Haines and Hoonah about 3 or 4 years ago. And so people are reluctant to go there. But through attrition, sometimes your workforce that remains, people who have tenure, are in the areas of content that are not as not core subject areas. And that's why the bill was amended to allow for that kind of layoff, but in court, so they just didn't stand up.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Questions to Mr. Rose? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rose, as we look at some of the, you know, the contentious issue that we're dealing with right here, we see that on one side you have the teachers, on the other side, I'm assuming the school board members, school boards that are out there that are, I was wondering, as a representative or as the head person of school boards, what is their take on this bill?
There are some in my membership who look at tenure as a real problem, almost from the standpoint of the boogeyman. We have worked around this issue for many years. There was a time when AASB and NEA Alaska could communicate in code. They were on one side of an issue and we'd be on the other. That relationship has changed tremendously, largely because we're in the business of student achievement, advocating for children and youth. And that's where we put our focus as an association, and I think this had a profound impact on what we do. When you ask what my people think, some of my people and some of our administrators admittedly see tenure as a problem, but it's not the kind of problem that it used to be, because that's not the focus now. The focus now is student achievement, trying to hire the best qualified people that you can and ensure that student achievement is being addressed. So the issue is not as adverse. Tenure is not as adverse an issue as it used to be. And you understand that the tenure laws have changed. So it is possible to non-retain a tenured teacher. You have to go through a process of evaluation, and there are plans of improvement and documentation that has to take place. But nonetheless, when you take a look at how we look at tenure now, the plans of improvement are designed to improve the quality of instruction and improve people's ability, not just to non-retain. It's not a documentation process to non-retain. It's an effort to try to improve instruction. And that's how we look at it.
Mr. Chairman, so the answer to the question is there's a divergence of opinions within the school boards themselves as to advocating for or against this bill.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, we don't have as much of an adverse opinion. There are people who look at tenure as it's an insurmountable task to non-retain someone, and it's not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Mr. Rose, any further questions of Mr. Rose? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else to testify before us at this point? Representative Dugan, and comments you care to make and wrap up?
Thanks for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Mike Dugan, representing House District 25. And in sitting and listening to the testimony, I decided to opt for candor in front of the committee.
Always a good
This may choice. Not be the problem it was, because frankly, we've got a lot of money. And that tends to dissolve differences in between groups like the teachers' unions and the school boards, just as it tends to dissolve differences inside this building. But I'd argue that we're not always going to have a lot of money. And that there, I'm not sure, Senator Davis may have been involved in this process long enough to remember that the uses of this pink slip process were not always pretty, and that they were often pretty political. And the other thing that I would point out is this. The last time we went through big pink slip problems in Anchorage, I had children in the school district. And I can remember those kids coming home scared to death that their favorite teachers were going to be laid off because they'd gotten those slips. So this is not, strictly speaking, just a matter between the unions and the school boards. There are a whole lot of, you know, students and parents who get caught up in this too. It's almost impossible for me to be able to estimate for the committee what, you know, that the quantity or quality of that angst that they developed is. But, you know, despite the testimony we've just heard, I'm pretty sure that if any of us is around long enough, we're going to come up on the flip side of this, and we're going to be right back where we were before, where this pink slip policy, which the state imposes on the districts, is going to cause exactly the same kind of problems.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Appreciate your bringing this before us, a very important discussion, and we will hold this over, and thank you very much.
Thank you,
Senator.
Could
I just make a comment? Yes, sir. Thank
Senator,
you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Mike, I think that this bill may work better, and the canary in the coal mine will be the year that we spend the public education fund and not replenish it. Then we're going to be back to where we were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago with that mess. And so there'll be time to creep up on this issue again if the time comes. And I suspect if we keep spending the way we are, we'll come to it sooner than later. But that will, there'll be a year's warning that we have depleted our bank account and we're going to be back picking the bones off the chicken, meat off the chicken bone. And so that's perhaps why this may want to sit for a while.
Thank you, Senator. Well, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wilkin, if I were convinced that having a lot of money would not trigger this particular provision, I think that I would agree with you. But I would just point out that we've got one of the biggest surpluses I've ever seen, and I worked in this building back in the, you know, the early 1980s when the oil money was really pouring in. It's now the middle of February. And, you know, if I were a betting man and wagering were legal in Alaska, I'd bet you a hamburger that we're not going to get this thing done by the trigger date that's in this bill. So.
Diet Coke.
Twinkie.
If Diet Cokes are okay?
Yeah.
Okay, Diet Coke then.
Twinkie.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Well, the best revenge is many of us will be gone, but you'll still be here. So. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you very much, Senator. Thank members you. Of the committee.
Thanks, everyone. We'll go on to Senate Bill 14. Senator Davis, there is your staff going to?
Yes.
If you'd come forward.
Going to come up.
Any comments you care to make? Start with Senator Davis.
I'd like to say to you, Mr. Chairman, and also to the committee members, I'm glad to have this bill back before us again. I appreciate that you did decide to bring it back. We've gone through quite a few changes. That's what we were thinking about doing on this particular bill. And what you have before you now is just dealing with one issue. We had a couple of things that we were working on, and we were talking about truant officers and trying to come up with something that would be agreeable for us to bring forward and pass this year. I since thought about it and decided that that was not the way to go. And so at this point, the bill that's before you now is just dealing with the compulsory age of 18. And I'll let Tom give an overview just to go through that quickly, if you don't mind.
No, thank you, Senator. So maybe just to get this on the record, we have a CS before us, Tom. Why don't we get a motion to consider the CS?
I move that CS for Senate Bill 1-4 version Lima be brought before the committee working document.
Thank you, Senator. Any objection to that?
No.
So we have before us version L. Everyone have that in front of them?
Yes.
Tom? Could you tell us the changes in this version?
Chairman Stevens, we have before us actually now version O. And I hope you have it on your desk there. If not, we can provide you a copy.
Let's just take a look at these. back in order. And Tom, over, if you'd tell us the changes.
Yes, the only change, I believe, in O, from the L version I just reviewed, and I didn't bring with me, well, I do have it in my files back here, was there was a, under 14, section 14.30.030, I believe, there was a subsection 2 that described the requirement to have a review body in every school district. And that was removed and in the last week, and that is the reason for this new draft, February the 11th of 08, in version O. So, and I was going to explain that in the sponsor statement, that the current version of this bill removed not only mandatory truant officers for the large districts that Senator Davis described, but also these truancy review bodies required in every district. It's been the position that we're not trying to force districts into one format or another. All districts must deal with truancy. We're hoping that the compulsory school age portion of this bill will essentially solve some of the problems that occur in the truancy. But that would be the only difference that came about. And it's in a small section, number 2, sub paragraph 2. And I believe I remember the section number 14.30.030, but it might be something like section 4 on page 4 of L.
Do you have L in front of you?
Do you have
that in front of you? Yes, we all have L. Okay. Oh, thank you, Tom. So just to keep us on order here, I'd appreciate a motion to have O before us when,
yes,
for
so
discussion
moved.
Purposes.
So moved.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. We have version O before us. Any objection to that?
No.
All right. So we are on O right now. And Mr. Obermeyer, the only change has to do with the review body.
Right. That's right. Correct.
Are there other changes that we have not had presented to us in earlier versions, like in the L version, that that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
No, I don't believe so, sir.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Obermeyer? Do have a lot of people that want to speak to us, so I know our time is a little bit short, but we'll try and get to as many as we can. Senator Huggins.
Yep. Tom, help me out. When did the transition go from away from truancy officers? Which version do we?
I believe that was in the K version. I don't know if you have this in front of you. I have L in front of me. That was the change. K version. That K version was in May. The it may have come out in the K version, which was on February the 1st. I believe it was in the L version doesn't have it either, I don't believe. Let me look here. The L version doesn't have it.
There might be some confusion. May I speak to that?
Yes, Senator Davis.
When we had introduced these bills, they were two separate bills. When they got to the Committee on Special Education, they did talk to me and wanted to know if I would be in agreement to combine the two together. And I agreed to that. And there was one hearing held on that bill, and no action was taken on it since that time. So we got to L because I decided that I did not want to go forward because I was working on another issue of dropout, and I was going to deal with the truancy issue at that time. And so I called up the chair and asked him if I could do a CS just to bring forward the compulsory age from 16 to 18. And that's what you have in front of you.
Through the chair, we have the truant officers were still in the K version back in May, on May the 2nd. Then we moved to L on February 1st went to the L version on February 1st, and I don't believe there was any significant change at that point. We did remove with the L version the truant officers, but we left in that section 2 I described. Then we moved to O to remove section 2 on page 4 of procedures to reduce and prevent truancy to remove the review body. So we've taken out essentially two control mechanisms in the school district. The mandatory school truancy officers for a large district of 1,000 ADM or more, and it only produced a few 13 truant officers throughout the state, and so it was a very expensive process. It was decided it would not be as effective. And then this review body, this mandatory review body, was felt that these districts were working internally to try to resolve this problem without our forcing them to have this particular procedure.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. So just for clarification, this bill in front of us has no truancy officers and no review body, and primarily what we're dealing with is changing the age from 16 to 18. Is that true, Senator Davis?
That's true.
Okay, good. Any further questions, Mr. Obermeyer? Thank you, Tom. We have okay, we have online, and we'll get the list of anybody else who cares to testify, but Mr. Rich Patton from Mountain Village. Mr. Patton, are you there?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I assume you can hear me.
Yes, go ahead.
My name is Rich Patton. I'm the superintendent of instruction for the Lower Utah School District. Been in Alaska in education for 12 years now. I don't know that I really want to testify on this bill. I know that we are concerned in Lower Yukon School District with attendance. I think probably if I could at least express my concerns, and not necessarily as it relates to this bill, and probably the reason that I'm here, is that you can expand the parameters of this particular bill, but our issue in rural Alaska, at least in our district, and I assume it's pretty similar across the state, is enforcement of the laws that we have now. And we have several younger children, or a fair percentage of younger children, that don't attend as regularly as they should, and it's very detrimental. It doesn't seem as if the resources are in rural Alaska to help the families or enforce this bill, and that's probably our concern. It doesn't speak directly to the bill, but I am interested in the efforts, as we have recently hired what we call a attendance specialist, which would be a combination of somebody to support and help families and a truancy officer, all wrapped into one. So it's more than just punitive, it's supportive as well. Again, the only thing I would like to say, and I don't, I'm not familiar with efforts in the past, our issue is not the legislation, but the enforcement end and the support end. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Patton. Mr. Scanning, here in the room with us. I'm sorry, Miss Scanning, Laurie Scanning.
All the time.
Well,
that I'm not a mister.
I'm sorry.
Thank
your writing is just about as bad as mine. I'm sorry.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Laurie Scanling. I'm principal of the Akuske Dakahiti Alternative High School here in Juneau, as well as the Homebridge Homeschool Program here in Juneau, two optional programs for our students in this district. I was born and raised in Alaska, and product of Alaska public school system. I have been with this system for 15 years, and I want to share just a couple quick things. One, last week I had parents come into my office and sit down and say, does our kid know he can drop out at age 16? Have you ever discussed this with him? I said, no, of course not. We're here to encourage dropouts to remain. She said, both parents said, please do not tell him that, because we feel we have no power to stop him when and if he decides he's going to drop out after he turns 16. I worked at our main high school for 9 years, and on more than one occasion had a child bring to me, as either his teacher or an assistant principal, the dropout form on age 16 on their birthday. And what we know about brain research today for teenagers is that they are not hardwired, particularly in the judgment area, until early 20s. So to assume that on the anniversary of their birthday, age 16, that they're suddenly somehow ready to make life-changing decisions, we now know is not a good assumption. There was a similar bill 2 years ago to raise the compulsory age, and it did receive the endorsement of student government officers across the state at their statewide meeting, as well as AASB. I see this as a bill for parent empowerment. Right now, parents have no authority to keep their child in school past their 16th birthday. And it's very stressful to meet with parents when their kid has in their mind that they're going to leave school. As you might already know, Alaska is sixth from the bottom in our country with our on-time graduation rate. About 1 in 3 students do not graduate on time. Nationally, about half of those who don't graduate on time never graduate. We know that nationally, the ethnic group with the highest dropout rate is American Indian and Alaska Native. And of course, Alaska has the highest proportion of Alaska Natives or American Indians enrolled in their school system. 26 states, plus DC, American Samoa, and Puerto Rico already have compulsory age attendance until 17 or 18, according to the Education Commission of the states as of this last summer. It's no surprise that dropping out perpetuates and correlates directly to poverty, and the reason it perpetuates it is, of course, those who do not have a high school diploma no longer can walk in necessarily to a well-paying lifelong job that has security to it. And in fact, those who do not even get a high school diploma, much less further training, have a 50% greater chance of being unemployed than the person who at least has the high school diploma. About 1 in 4 kids who live in the lowest 20% income brackets in this country don't finish high school, and they then perpetuate that poverty cycle. I know from the 2000 census data, and I share this information with my students, those who do not get a high school diploma earn $250,000 less over their lifetime than the person who at least graduates. So the diploma itself has great value. When they don't graduate, they're a drag on the economy in terms of public assistance and a reduction in tax revenues that you can collect from those individuals. And of course, dropouts are 3 times more likely to be incarcerated. I would encourage you to look at this bill and raise the compulsory age to 18, not just 17. I understand that 18 is the age of majority, but a Canadian study not long ago showed the benefits of raising the minimum age for every additional year lowered the probability of being unemployed and boosted weekly earnings, which of course in many areas increased tax revenues. I would make clear in the bill that any alternative, particularly at the high school level, should be an accredited alternative. As the principal of the homeschool program, we guide parents into choosing accredited materials rather than unaccredited. It assures quality, particularly in a time of online high schools that have proliferated without accreditation across the nation and the world. I think it's important that students are doing work that is accredited. In addition, I have not had the opportunity to see version O. I'm looking at version L. I would encourage you to ensure that if you're excusing somebody from school because they're being educated at home, that there be required, as we do for our statewide correspondence schools, regular evidence of progress. We should not allow our students to flee the school system under the guise of being a homeschooled student. There does need to be evidence of progress. Juneau adopted a new system thanks to our municipality about 3 years ago. We modeled it after Anchorage, which allows truancy officers to issue a simple ticket rather than working with the district attorney's office, which was very cumbersome and arduous and, of course, was not a priority compared to other actual crimes that were being committed in the community. And if there is an appropriate way to incorporate a ticket issuing authorization, it made it much easier for us to ticket families and have them quickly appear before court and pay a fine or get their child into school. So again, I encourage you, raise it to 18. The benefits are monetary to both the individual and the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laurie. Very fine testimony. I appreciate that. Yes, sir.
May I just speak to the age issue? The reason you see it in the bill stands where the 17 years, and that has to do with what legal, what the draft is put in there. It is up to age 18. But I can't explain the way they said it, but the 17 is there saying, and maybe my aide could come up and tell you exactly why they said it had to be 17, because when I looked at it, I said, no, I don't want it to be 17. And when they were phoned, they said that's the way it had to be stated in there. So it is up to age 18. And maybe you could just read the language, and maybe that would be a clarification to you, since you don't have the bill in front of you.
Okay, perhaps I misunderstood. It sounded like at the end of their 17th year, they could depart school. And
would you just stay where you are,
sure.
Lori, and we'll ask Tom to come back up in the other chair there if you'd explain to us that that little issue of 17.
Senator Stevens and through the chair members, the reason that Senator Davis was correct that Legislegal decided to craft it this way, we wanted it to go through age 18. But to go through age 18, I think we had to bump to 19. And we ran into the other issues of reaching the age of majority when people can do pretty much what they want at age 18. And that was the reason that we didn't bump it to 19, but this is to go, as Senator Davis indicated, up to the birth date of age 18.
Could you tell us what line we're looking at, Tom?
And let me look at the bill itself here, the old version, if I can find over.
In all of them.
Okay. Let me see the number you had.
Page 2.
Okay. It says under 18 years of age.
And you're on page?
On page 2 top. That was the first significant change in the language of this particular section of the statute 1151-138. And this is draft O. And this number has been in all the drafts to try to raise compulsory school age to age 18 only because this was what the legislegal staff indicated would be the only way of trying to keep a child there who would be over 18. If we bumped it to 19, we'd be in this conflict. So that was the reason for this.
And Mr. Chairman, online on the first page and in subsection 2, it says under 18 years of age or allow a child to stay to this 18th birthday. So when you saw that 17 in there, she said that would take them into their 18th birthday.
Up to age 18.
Yes.
I certainly think that's an improvement. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you, Tom, for that explanation. And thank you, Laurie, for your comments, Senator Olson.
Ms. Scanlon, I guess one of the phrases or one of the things you pointed out is regular evidence of progress. How would you implement something like that? Because I think it's a great idea, but I don't see how, from a teacher standpoint, we'd be able to do that.
Currently, under Alaska law, which regulates the statewide correspondence school, regular evidence of progress can be verbal or written on a monthly basis. For example, our program, which is local only, we follow those guidelines anyway. We make a telephone call and have a conversation with either the student or the parent. On a quarterly basis, we ask for written evidence. That can simply be a copy of the grade you've received from your accredited correspondence program or a copy of the work that you've completed. There could be in each district just a single person if they don't already have a connection to a correspondence program, either statewide or in their district, who could be responsible for receiving that evidence of progress. It really is a gatekeeping mechanism to identify those families who are doing nothing. It doesn't take too much time. They are held accountable. If the work doesn't come in on that quarterly basis, then you contact the family. So I think there are a couple of mechanisms that are possible for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Surely.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Laurie.
Yeah, quick question.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah. Ms. Stanley, you mentioned parents empowered by an older age of mandatory attendance. You know, I guess parentally, it never entered my mind with our three children that it mattered how old they were in school. And so corresponding, it's a little bit foreign to me that would matter as far as my decision-making and their students' decision-making in school. And I guess in talking to people that are in the same business you are, in alternative schools in particular, is that the parent may be as big a problem as the child. And whether or not a rule applies or doesn't apply, let me say it another way. There's a lot of 16-year-olds that drop out of school also, mm-hmm. or less than 16, because they don't comply. I mean, that's one of the social phenomena in the target group we're talking about, in my estimation. Would you agree or disagree with that? Yeah. So, I mean, automatically changing age may not, in fact, change the behavior. I'm one of those, whatever we can do that, quote, will work, you know, I'm in favor of. But in that extent, do you have any data that shows for those states or locations that have a higher mandatory attendance law that you look at there was some movement in their graduation rate versus attendance rate?
I don't have that with me. I think that correlation would be relatively easy to make. The Education Commission of the states is a data clearinghouse. They may have that. I know they have disparate data on the very topic you're asking about, but I do not have that with me. I understand what you're asking, and it's something that either I or perhaps the staff member here could do that correlation.
Yeah, no, I would appreciate that. And, yes. And my memory's not quite as good as it used to be, but I think it was a New York study or a contemporary study that essentially their data showed, as I recall, that though there were more students staying in school potentially, that the graduation rate remained relatively similar. In other words, kids were in school but didn't graduate. But I would be interested in seeing the data.
One comment through the chair, if I may. I want to just clarify, and I'm sure you know this, that graduation is defined in many states as on-time graduation, and that phenomenon to which you refer could be affected by that particular definition. What I think is also necessary is extended research as to who finally graduates. So when we look at graduation, there's a difference between dropping out, which is that one-year snapshot, and graduation, which is that on-time cohort with which you're supposed to walk across the stage.
Right.
So I think there's also another level of research that could be beneficial to know about, and that is who eventually finally.
Good.
It's important.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thanks very much. Mr. Alcantara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be quick. John Alcantara, Government Relations Director for NEA Alaska. It's always fascinating. I haven't been to all 52 of the annual delegate assemblies of NEA Alaska. It's always fascinating to look back. NEA Alaska has new business initiatives or individual pieces of policy supporting this as far back as 1980, again in 1999, and again in 2003. So as a parent of two school-aged children in Alaska's public schools, I'm fortunate enough to have a spouse that makes sure they go to school every day. And I like Senator Huggins, I don't worry about the dropout situation. But as a uncle of 59 nieces and nephews, 51 of which either did receive, are receiving, or will receive their education here in Alaska, I've seen it in my own family where folks don't have as much parental involvement or as much desire to go to school. And my own nephew was proud one time when he only missed 2 out of 5 days at school 1 week. And I told him, I said, Dayton, at this rate, you're going to graduate at about 24 years old. You can't miss 40% of instruction. So anything like this that enables him to stay in school, he's a freshman now at Burchell High School in Wasilla, an alternative program, anything that requires him to look forward beyond his 16th birthday and think he's going to be able to get out of there, I support as an individual Alaskan, and NEA Alaska supports Senate Bill 14 and all its variations, and I haven't seen the new version, but I think it's been explained very well. So thank you for your time. I know you're in a hurry.
Thank you, Mr. Ackerman. Well, it always seems like we're in a hurry, but my intention, since we are down to three on it, it's up to you, Senator Davis, if you wanted to move this out, but we could extend our hearing to Wednesday and finish this up.
If there's testimony, I think we need to take it so people can be on the record.
Right.
I'm not interested in having it passed out. We don't have the people here. We can bring it back Wednesday, but if you want to continue the testimony, I'm willing to sit here.
Right. We'll continue the testimony, and we will bring it up again on Wednesday and deal with it at that time. Thank you, Senator. All right. Mm-hmm. Mr. Rose.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. And I will be brief as well. Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank the sponsor for removing that section that created the review committee. It was a real concern of ours. It was not just district-wide. It talked about schools, and we got over 550 some odd schools, and it just was very cumbersome.
it really took the focus away from what we really wanted to see, which was the extension to age 18 or up to age 18. All of those issues have been discussed. And in prior testimony, I would suggest to all of you, how many in this room feel that you could make as an important decision as whether or not to continue your education at age 15? Would you entrust that kind of decision making to any youngster? And I would suggest to you, no. The longer we can keep kids in school, the better chance we have of kids being successful. And that really is what we're all about. We're about advocating for children and youth in their academic achievement. And the longer we can retain them in school and give parents the ability to have some requirement that helps them keep their kids in school, I think is important. So with that, we support the bill in its current form, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Rose. That's an interesting point to try and imagine at age 15 whether you would trust your decisions. That's a good point. Senator.
No question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carl. All right, we'll go on to Gray Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell from Department of Labor Workforce Development.
I'm just here for
questions. Oh, I see. Yes, you are here for questions. Thank you very much. Appreciate your being here. Well, very well, then. We anything in wrap-up you'd care to say, Tom?
Yes, Senator Stevens, I just wanted to mention, I will try to check on Senator Huggins' question about the proving higher age creates higher graduation rates. That's essentially what he said and was concerned about that, and I think it's a reasonable request. We may be able to get some data. The second thing is that in New York, they have a similar problem. They created, in the last few years, four new what they call graduation plus high schools to deal with kids up through 18 and get them through the process. Even though they were falling through the cracks, they've grabbed them and they're having a much higher success rate with them. Now, whether overall graduate, since they have so many into that program, I don't know what their overall graduation rate is, but it was a very successful program. And then finally, I did include in your sponsor statement on page 2, underlined in the middle of the page, the definition of graduation rate in this state. And it was a very valid question. Our comment brought up about the fact that there are different definitions of graduation rates throughout the country. I actually worked the numbers on the graduation rate a couple of years ago in the Anchorage School District based on this definition. And it does work, but it does, as was indicated, take that camaraderie, that group of kids from grades 9 through 12 to come up with the proper graduation rate.
Thank you very much, Tom. I see we have somebody else to testify, and that's Debbie Jocelyn from Eagle River. Ms. Jocelyn, can you hear us?
Yes, Chairman, thank you.
Please go ahead.
My name is Debbie Jocelyn, and I'm president of Eagle Farm Alaska, and we are a pro-family group. And I'm calling to voice my opposition to Senate Bill 14. I appreciate Senator Davis introducing this bill, or at least I appreciate her heart behind it, because I know that she is concerned, as you all are, with the high dropout rate. And I am, too, a parent of four children. I homeschool my children independently through no program. And my kids are all doing well in school, and they all have aspirations of going on to college. But I recognize that's not the case with many of our youth in Alaska. And I'm concerned about that. But I'm also concerned that passing a bill that changes the compulsory age of education from 16 to 18 isn't the answer to that problem. I think that many times the young people that we're talking about that are at risk of dropping out, I look at them and many of them don't have a dad at home. So many of them come from broken homes, from situations where education is not highly valued and they're not getting the encouragement they need at an early age. And I see this as a bandage thing that just isn't going to fix the real problem. To tell them once they hit 16, no, you've got to stay in a couple more years and you've got to stay until they're 18, I think that we're not really fixing the root cause of the problem. And do I have the answer for what the root cause is? I'm not sure that government can fix what's wrong with our culture that's causing so many kids to drop out. I think that government can encourage our society, our culture, to value education. But I don't think that changing the law from 16 to 18 is going to fix this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jocelyn.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
May I just maybe ask the question or make a statement to the speaker? I thank you for calling in, and I understand the things that you are saying, and many of those things that you said are true, because there is no certain thing that can be done, no silver bullet, that will resolve the problems that we have in our school system, the dropout rate or the truancy rate. But this is just one of the tools in the tools box that what might help us keep youngsters in a program long enough for them to get a degree, a diploma. And that is my reason for introducing this bill. It doesn't even preclude parents from not being able to keep their kids out of school if they want to, because there are laws on the book to tell you, should you want your child out at 16, you just make that statement and sign that paper, your child will be free to not return to school. That would be a parent's decision. So we're not taking it out of the hand of parents, but we're putting it there for the school district, because school districts feel if they could keep many of those children long enough, they might be able to get them to finish school. They might have to go to an alternative program, or they might have to have some very special attention and help them be more engaged and keep them there, but in the end, we're going to help society. We'll pay less this way by keeping them in school than we would having them going out and have to pay more when they get into trouble or don't have jobs. So I hope that you would reconsider that and look at that and think that this might be a good thing rather than something that we don't need. And I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Any response, Ms. Jocelyn?
Not at this time.
Okay.
I appreciate the senator's heart, like I said, and I'll mull over those things. I still, at this point, I have the conclusion that that's not the answer.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. I appreciate your comments. All right. I apologize, Tom and Senator, that we have lost our quorum here, but my intention is to bring this back first thing on Wednesday, 8 a.m., and deal with it at that point. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nothing further. We're adjourned.